That intro to the show still cracks me up. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. For your listening to Splidger for a couple of days a week, keeping the pilot light on while I'm trying to be working on a documentary and all sorts of other projects that have just, like, basically been driving me insane the last 5 years that I've been unable to attend to them. Ever feel like the entire time that you're living and you're working, it's for something you'd rather not be doing for a cause you don't really care about? Luckily, I have this gig, which is just fantastic, and I love doing it because I get to talk to people who are smarter than me, more experienced than me, and sometimes even disagree with me, and I get to hear them out, and I gain this thing called perspective. Somebody commented on a YouTube video not too long ago, "Oh, you've given this person some airtime. I'm switching off, Vinny. I'm not listening anymore." Okay, well, hold on a second, bro. First of all, you probably weren't listening in the first freaking place. Because there are a lot of things that I say on this show that are really, really offensive, because they're true, right? And if you've got fragile sensibilities and everything, this isn't the show for you. Second of all, if you're unwilling to listen to people you don't agree with, give them airtime and so on and so forth, how are you ever going to know what they're thinking? How are you ever going to know what's going on in the world if you only listen to the things which you already know and already agree with, and you don't know the things that you don't know, do you? Thank you for listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I've been looking over my my donations that have been coming in, and I recognise all the names and everything. You know, like, this person's a builder, this person's an activist, this person's a writer, you know, so on and so forth. And it's just all people from all different walks of life listen to this show for the same reason that I broadcast it, because it's just too freaking good to turn down. My very special guest, considering somebody who sacrifices an awful lot on a daily basis, that he just can't turn down an appearance on the Vinnie Eastwood Show, is Kevin Galilee, as in the sea. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Good morning from Romania, Vinnie. This is where I am currently, and I believe this is our fourth or fifth interview.
Is it, am I becoming a popular critique? Am I? The other question I wanted to get down to is, you're going back on hunger strike again regarding depopulation. But before we get into that and the recent news, would you be able to give the listeners who are perhaps unaware of your work a little bit about yourself?
I began in 2012 by with my political activism, so to say, by exposing the covert program of population control, which I have nicknamed the Global Depopulation Policy. And I did that while being actually chased by governments around the world for exposing the program of surveillance and censorship a few years earlier. And that was later confirmed by the likes of Edward Snowden, but 3 years later. So my political activism and conflict with the authorities goes back now since to 2010. And ever since, my life has been destroyed bit by bit. And so for the past 5 years, I have lived out of suitcases and have moved from country to country, from location to location, to be able to continue this kind of work without a penny, but with growing support from the general public. Not only did I expose the program of global population control, but I also explained how the international system functions since 1945, namely along the axis of depopulation, globalization, depopulation being secret and globalization being rather open but coerced. And this has been a very difficult struggle for obvious reasons, namely that the international community does not know how to function without committing genocide in the name of peace. And it is unable to change course or unwilling to change course because the entire Western structure, from government to NGOs to civil society to the media, is built around committing genocide and keeping this secret.
So they're unable to continue running without committing genocide. Are they capable of grasping irony, perhaps?
In 1945, they were able to switch from a policy, or rather a system that was based on military aggression to one that was based on committing genocide through covert means in the name of population control in order to keep international peace. So it was a big step forward in a sense. Population control, with all its flaws, is still somewhat better than outright war. And now, 70 years later, the international community finds itself forced by us activists to change the system once again. And the obvious progress that would have to be taken is that we would have to go from a forced system of population control through chemical and biological methods to one of consensus. And that means that the population would have to be educated very, very quickly so that the general public makes the right decisions with respect to international peace, the preservation of vital natural resources, and the safeguarding of the environment, because all of these things depend on controlling population in each and every country. Now, I've been doing my utmost to force every government and the United Nations, which is the organization that oversees this and coordinates this global program. But they have, so far, I have succeeded in shutting down their chemical methods of population control, which are now in the process of being eliminated from our system. And each and every country has identified hundreds of endocrine disruptors and has scheduled them for removal from the system. Obviously, this would mean that the entire industrial landscape would have to be retooled, so to say. All of these chemicals need to be taken out. They have to be replaced with something else, something that does not damage the human endocrine system and does not have the dual function of sterilizing and causing morbidity. And
can I see if I can cauterize this for people? The problem with our industrial civilization, we have very low death rates in the birth, and so, you know, population just keeps growing and growing and growing. But what's been happening since 1945 is a whole bunch of sterilants, endocrine disruptors, etc., have been added into the food chain in order to make the birth rate go down in an artificial, covert way. But what's problematic about that is it's going to systematically exterminate the entire human race because there soon won't be anybody who's fertile left, and we go extinct. Now, the problem is you're either tossed up between you just let everything go for its life and then everybody's going to be scrambling for resources in a Mad Max-type era at some point in the near future, or you can take it into your hands and voluntarily take control of your own procreation, rather than having somebody do it to you forcibly through government or having somebody do it to you covertly through additives in the food and water.
Yeah, that is the only alternative. The problem is the transition from these covert methods imposed by the government to these overt methods adopted willingly by the population itself. In order to make this transition, governments would have to tell the truth. They would have to confess that for the past seven decades in some countries, less in other countries, they have been involuntarily sterilizing the population and in the process causing tremendous damage to the
So
the
all we've got to do is get governments to start telling the truth. Can't be that hard. I'm sorry.
Well, if the mainstream media were to do its job and not be, a tool of misinformation, we would have no problem in accomplishing this transition in 2, 3, 4 years. The main block now towards a society based on truth rather than one based on lies is this. Terrible media. This how anybody can work in the media and mainstream media nowadays and have any amount of self-respect is beyond me. Because nobody can say that they're not aware of what is going on. Alone, the evidence that I have provided is sufficient to educate the entire global public in no time at all.
Mm.
And I have personally informed each and every media in just about every country on Earth. And I have written a global media directory that is 800 pages long for this very purpose, in order to first educate the media so that the media can then do its job and educate the public. But they're refusing to do so.
So the other problem is getting the media to understand the truth and then report it to the people, as well as having governments actually say the truth. Now, something tells me that there's also a lot of companies that are involved in supplying these endocrine disruptors and so on and so forth. Do they have a profit margin at stake in here?
Absolutely. No corporation can do business nowadays and thrive without having some kind of part to play in this global depopulation program. If they are willing to play this part and insert a number of poisons into our food or beverages or medicines or environment, then they will thrive because they will have very lucrative contracts with the United Nations, with national governments that will be safeguarded. And they will be part and parcel of this program of population control. So they will have a dual role to play, not only of an economic role, but also a demographic and a political role. And the those willing to play this political role, those corporations willing to poison their fellow human beings into sterility and morbidity and early death, will be financially rewarded and very handsomely. Those who are not willing to play this role will be driven into bankruptcy. And this is happening not only on the industrial level, this is happening on the economic level, because that is how politicians are being coerced to play along, to cooperate in this global program of mass murder. That is how individuals are coerced, and that is how corporations are coerced. The entire structure, the entire system, this is something very difficult to wrap your mind around. Our world nowadays is based on genocide. You take genocide out of this equation and the entire international order falls apart.
Which is why we like to talk about the lighter side of genocide here. I mean, hey, just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we shouldn't make it fun. I have this also problem with the whole convincing the media thing, because honestly, I think that after a successive amount of decades of people being schooled in public education, then coming straight home from their public education to being sat in front of the television, not really eating any nutritious foods, because all the foods that they eat are advertised on television and no nutritious food gets advertised on television, it's far as I know, but I haven't watched television in 2 years, so I don't know exactly. And on top of that, you've got your basic trauma-based mind control symptoms that are being done in all their education things. You know, they're getting up real early in the morning. There's your sleep deprivation. They're getting in front of a classroom with a single teacher. There's your single submission to authority. And also the smart and the brightest of the group basically often get ostracized and teased by the other kids. And the whole thing just sort of suppresses people's sense of the possible. It suppresses their curiosity, and at such point they stop questioning things altogether, and they're only really willing to sit there and accept things and repeat things now, and the capacity to think, to digest, has in fact been robbed from them, and I'm not 100% sure that everybody can get it back. And I think this extends as well to the people who now work in the media. I mean, no offense, I know people in the media, but they don't get it, right? And it doesn't matter how much information you put in front of them, they just don't get it, or at least not yet. It might take a while to sink in.
Well, this is a very difficult subject that requires a very steep learning curve and the ability to absorb a lot of information and put it all together. The problem is that we have been severely damaged over the past seven decades. And today, there is not a single human being in the developed world, where this program has been ongoing for six or seven decades, that is not damaged to some extent by the chemical and biological methods of depopulation unleashed on us since the 1950s. we're all diminished intellectually, physically, and even genetically. And those of us who have had the bad luck of being the third generation of such diminished individuals, they have cumulative damage, damage that has been passed on from one generation to the other, and that has been exacerbated with each generation.
And so now that
media thrives on its ability to dumb down the message, and it has to dumb down the message because people won't get it otherwise.
They're just getting dumber and dumber.
Yes, but the same happens with the curriculum in schools. You know, I was comparing notes here with the older generation. I'm 50 now, and I'm talking to my parents' generation. They're telling us, you know, how the curriculum has changed. Most of them are teachers, by the way, in my family. And how the curriculum now is a lot lighter, and that people are students are now basically 2 years behind the students in their generation, and that is the case because people simply cannot absorb information as fast as we are able to before this program started in 1945, and human beings are not diminished in all these respects. But Vinny, I've always been at the forefront of this subject, and I have two new important news to communicate to the public.
Sure.
One is a change in methodology of the depopulation lobby, and the other is that I have uncovered new methods that they're using to sterilize us and to kill us earlier. So let me start with the first one, just briefly, mention that how this is done. What is happening is that governments and the United Nations are now faced with resistance from civil society. They are pressured by an increasingly volatile world. They are handicapped by the loss of the cover of secrecy. They are disarmed of plausible deniability. And they're driven by the sustainability agenda, which is more ambitious than the previous agenda. So the UN and national governments have become desperate, and they have become isolated and have been forced to adopt a new strategy of population control that no longer relies on their lost ability to turn man against man, but on a newly gained ability to turn nature against man. So population control via chemically induced sterility and morbidity over the course of a lifetime through the adulteration of the basic elements of life with endocrine disruptors is being phased out as more ambitious depopulation targets via vaccine-induced apoptosis, and I will explain later what that means, through mandatory immunization programs are being phased in. And this new methodology of subverting fertility and increasing mortality, which are the two means of stable populations, is implemented under the guise of societal interventions for public health outcomes. And they're using a new global instrument of coercion called a public health emergency of international concern. And this requires far fewer financial and human resources, but entails far greater risks for mankind and for all life on Earth. This methodology allows for the pursuit of peak population and peak life expectancy at the same time by genetically programming sterility and morbidity early in life through childhood vaccines. So the engineered demographic transition is accomplished worldwide by 2050 in the most economical fashion, but also with little or no regard to the integrity of human life, fully outside the law, and in defiance of constitutional guarantees. So they are genetically altering us now through childhood vaccines from the moment we are born in order to stabilize the population by limiting how many children are born, and also by limiting the duration of our lifetimes, that is, how long we live. And I have looked at the data. In the previous generation, you know, they were willing to allow people to live to 80 years of age or longer. And now it appears to me, looking at the data, that their target is 70 years. They want to limit life to about 70 years because that is the most economical lifespan. People work to about 65 or 67 now in this generation. And then you live for 2-3 years in retirement, and that's it. You're dead. And that means that governments don't have these tremendous costs at the end of life. And we all know that most expenditures are spent by governments on the elderly. And this happens especially in terms of healthcare in the last 5 years of life.
So let me get this straight. They want to tax somebody's work for a lifetime, but they don't want to support that person after their lifetime of work.
Yes, they are in a bind. And let me just explain why. Having started to interfere with population growth 70 years ago or 60 years ago, depending on the nation, they have ended up with inverted population pyramids. That is to say, too many old people and too few young people to support these old people in old age. So in countries that were first subjected to population control, which are the Allied countries who lost the war, Germany, Japan, and Italy, now you have 25% of the population, a quarter of the population is age 65 and over, and less than 20% is aged 15 and under. So you have an unsustainable population structure, and this unsustainable population structure will persist for about 20, 30, 40 years until they manage to shorten the lifespan of the baby boom generation and the generation that comes after. And then you have an equal number of old people to young people and to working people. So population structure becomes stable again. Because now they're in this conundrum and they're forced to limit life, to shorten life, they have to do now they have to not only interfere with fertility, but also find ways to weaken the immune system so that people die faster. And this is where vaccines come in. In countries where that are sort of at the beginning of this demographic transition, they're using vaccines merely to cause sterility, whereas in the countries that are at the end of the demographic transition, they're using vaccines to cause morbidity and premature death. And this is where, for instance, the flu vaccine comes in. This is the only purpose of the flu vaccine in the Western world, because it sure as hell does not protect us from influenza. So they're now in this terrible situation that was started 70 years ago, and they cannot stop the process, because if they do stop the process, the entire social structure will collapse. It's just not financially sustainable.
They let the cat out of the bag, and there might be, you know, mass panic, reprisals, etc. So I can understand they're kind of in a bind, because criminal organizations go to this point quite regularly. They simply expand too fast, and then there's a whole bunch of unforeseen consequences to their criminal behavior. And before long, suspicion gets drawn upon them, and if enough suspicion gets drawn, they can no longer continue their criminal enterprise without getting their heads cut off, right? So this is where they are. Do you think these people are desperate, these depopulation connoisseurs?
Absolutely. They are now in the most desperate phase, which is the latter phase, the end tail of the demographic transition, where everything is unstable and everything is volatile. And they also have the added problem that they're not equally far advanced in this engineered population stabilization across the world. So you have the Western world, which has ended this transition, and their populations have been losing people, have been diminishing for the past 15 years. And then you have the developed world, where in many countries the population is still blossoming. In the Western world, where the population is now decreasing too fast, because, for instance, my generation, I'm 50 now, by the way, up to about a quarter of us are sterile. But in this new generation, my children's generation, half of them will be sterile. And the damage is already done. The damage was done in the womb during the period, the 9 months of gestation, and the first 5 years of life. And that damage is irreversible. So for the next 30 years, the duration of the remaining lifetime of my generation and the reproductive years of my children's generation, we're going to see a population collapse. Already, the population of the Western world is decreasing far too fast. And they're trying to make up for this decrease by allowing a huge influx, or rather generating a huge influx of immigrants to offset the rapid native decline in population. And this is why we see these millions of people now flooding into Europe. This is all by design. It has nothing to do with accident. The wars that were caused in the Middle East. One of the objectives was to be able to drive, a lot of that surplus population from the Middle East into Europe to offset the rapid population decline of the Western world. Why can't they accept or can't they live with this rapid population decline? Because it is deadly to the economy. When the population decreases, the entire economic activity of a country goes into a tailspin. And not only is there no income coming in for government, at a time when government needs the most money because it has all of these social entitlements to cover and has to be able to support all of these old people in their old age. So not only do they have that cost, which is higher now than ever before, they cannot cover these costs. This is why they resort to these mass programs of moving, millions of people into countries that are losing population too fast. And this, of course, is causing a lot of destabilization on the cultural front. And we see, tremendous backlash in Europe. The countries that are not willing to play along with this because they want to maintain their cultural integrity are going to basically become poor. And this is what is happening to Eastern Europe. First of all, very few immigrants want to come to Eastern Europe because it is relatively poor compared to Western Europe. So they prefer to go on to countries like Germany and Sweden and settle there. But even if they did want to come, they're not welcome. And we see what has happened in Hungary. Hungary has closed its borders. Most Eastern European countries don't want foreigners. Even if they were Christians, they wouldn't want them. But they also happen to be Muslims, and that is an even greater impediment to integration, according to these countries and to the general population. So this is one of the ways in which the global situation is unstable, because they're trying to make up for the damage, for the difficulties created by interfering with the population structure. Yes, right. They are desperate.
So they go, all right, well, boys, we've really screwed this one up. We've made most of our people sterile, and they won't have any jobs, bro. There's not enough young people working and making money and that kind of thing. The economy's going to collapse and everybody's going to die. What do we do? Well, why don't we just chuck a whole bunch of immigrants who don't speak the language and don't share their religion into the mix? What could possibly go wrong?
before I forget to mention this, let me just say something that is very, very important. I've noticed only in the last 2 weeks because new statistics have come in. Several countries in Western Europe, primarily were most obviously in Italy, are now registering tremendous spikes in the death rate, spikes not seen since the Second World War. And how are these spikes to be explained? In Italy, for instance, the spike is 11%. So 11% more people have died in this year already than in the previous year. And that is a sign that the population policy is working, that they are now trying to get rid of the baby boom generation, which is such a burden on the country's finances.
Well, either that or somebody contaminated all the olive oil.
It's not just the olive oil, because Eastern Europe is in an even worse predicament. Romania, again, is registering since 1990, when it switched from communist to capitalist, a 20% increase annually in the death rate. And that is happening across the board, across Eastern and Western Europe, not as drastically as in Eastern Europe, in Western Europe. But we're talking about 5 to 10%. Britain has a 5 to 6% spike in the death rate. So they are getting rid of the elderly at a faster pace than ever before, because they have these inverted population structures. That's one thing. In Eastern Europe, where they don't want any immigrants to offset for this rapid population decline, the economies are down on their knees. There are absolutely no jobs. I'm looking here just in my immediate family, and I have, you know, this young generation is very well educated. There's architects and doctors and engineers and whatnot. They're all jobless. They're all sitting around designing video games or doing, you know, things that are not nearly as important as their education would have allowed them to do. And they're just treading water, you know, waiting for a better opportunity that will never come, because the population, again, looking at the statistics, will continue to decrease for the next 30 years rapidly. Romania, for instance, is scheduled to lose 50% of its population, according to UN data, by the end of this century. Of course, the UN data does not even consider the fact that the coming generation is sterile to the tune of 50%. These statistics are based on the knowledge that the population is sterile to the tune of a quarter, 25%. If they would consider the fact that this coming generation is sterile to the tune of 50%, half of them, they would have to redo their calculations, and they will find that the country's populations will halve by probably 2060 or 2070. By the end of the century, there'll be maybe a quarter of the current populations.
Wait a second. So you're saying in the future, the very near future, if nothing changes, the only people that will be left will be the super rich, healthy people and the poor and sick people who don't have jobs?
Already, we look at the United States and we see that 48 million people there are jobless, and they rely on food tickets or food stamps from the government, whereas only 45 million people have working jobs, have full-time jobs. So there are already more people unemployed than people employed. And the government, you know, is doing its utmost not only to get rid of the elderly, but also to get rid of the unemployed. For the same reason as they want to get rid of the elderly, namely that they consider these people to be a burden on society because they don't contribute anything to it. So our society has become like a farm. A farm for animals, for cows or for sheep.
Or domesticated.
We are looked at with the exact same lack of consideration, if you want, or dollar signs, as, you know, a farmer would look at his poultry or cows. We are to be milked, you know, for as long as we are functional and as we can produce.
If you've got old hens that aren't laying any eggs, all they're doing is consuming your food, you got to kill them and eat them.
Yes, and that is exactly how a society has become. And, of course, the economic system, you know, is part and parcel guilty for this outcome, because every government now and every corporation is looking at one and one factor only, primarily a profit. So if a human being is no longer profitable, then his or her life will be terminated. How did we get to this? Well, just consider
it's
that.
It's funny you should say that. Well, one second before you say this, because a bunch of people were talking to me the other week about, you know, how I should change what I'm doing and change what I'm saying and change who I'm supporting and everything, because I'll make more money if I do that. And a thought really occurred to me today. What will humanity look like when the only thing humanity values anymore is money?
We're already there. The only thing that that matters now, in the perspective of governments and corporations, is the profit motive. That is the only thing that has remained, and that is why we're in a self-destruct mode. And the notion that anybody's life has meaning today is ridiculous. None of our lives have meanings now. Just keep in mind that everything we do, all of the wealth that we create now, all of the surplus profit that we create, is used exclusively to eliminate us from the face of this earth. So we are paying for our own self-destruction, and we produce the means and distribute and apply the means to our own self-destruction. Now, there are a lot of creatures out there that are a lot dumber than we are. But once you consider this, you realize that there is no creature on this earth that is dumber than human beings, because no creature on this earth would deliberately work towards its own self-destruction.
Well, in fact, I dispute that, in fact, because there are lots and lots of cases in nature where herd animals will indeed have these big population growth spurts during, for example, really warm climatological periods when they have an excess of food supply, and then that population will subsequently die off as winters get colder and colder when the climate changes. Essentially, life flourishes when conditions are really easy, and life dies and kind of goes into a stasis mode when conditions are really hard. And I think maybe humanity's getting out of its flourishing stage, and it's starting to realize that things aren't easy anymore.
Well, this process has happened, you know, throughout the ages with human beings, as it has happened with every other creature. Of course, it's a lot more subtle in nature. You know, nature does not allow these kind of populations to grow to such an extent as to destabilize the entire cycle of life.
I've never seen deer like poison somebody's water with fluoride and like tell the other deer, bro, it'll be really good for your molars.
Yes, but this is the very cycle that you know, our technocrats have been trying to avoid. We are trying to break out of this cycle, if you want. And in order to break out of this cycle, you have to balance lives, births, and deaths. So this is the game that has been played, you know, since 1945. Actually, it started in 1902, according to my latest research in a few Western countries. But it was not an international program. It was not coordinated. It was only in Europe, only in some Western nations. So they went through a first demographic transition starting in 1902, countries like Germany, for instance, and Luxembourg. But since 1945, it has been coordinated on a global level, and it has become a global program around which, you know, life revolves. So they're trying to break humanity out of the cycle of growth, and then decline through, you know, famine and war. Of course, for the obvious reason that we cannot allow ourselves to launch a nuclear war with all these nuclear armed countries nowadays. What is it, 7 or 8 of them? A nuclear war would mean the end, not only the end of mankind, but the end of all life on Earth, most likely.
And except the cockroaches and politicians, of course, who will have their deep underground military bases, where they'll spend 100 years whittling down their supplies, and meanwhile they're living with all the other people that managed to get their tickets down into the deep underground military bases in the event of a nuclear attack. People like the Rothschilds and Rockefellers and any kind of incredibly wealthy, self-entitled, psychopathic, pedophile, murdering, cult ritual, human sacrificing scum that you could possibly imagine. So there's an old saying, sometimes people end up exactly where they deserve to be.
You know, the world today operates by the principle that those who participate, who are contributors to the global genocide are rewarded. So they become part of the inner circle, and they are handsomely rewarded, and their families will thrive. And those who do not want to play a part in the global genocide, are going to be exterminated. That is what is happening. What annoys me is that the vast majority of people out there, even when given this information, they are incapable of processing it. They don't know what to do with it. Why? Because they cannot see long-term threats. They cannot perceive, you know, the slow kill that is going on now, which is a kill of our ability to procreate and limitation on our lifespan. They cannot perceive that as an immediate threat, as a threat, period. They lack the intelligence. They lack the creativity, I guess, to be able to intellectually, you know, create this picture in their heads, because obviously this is something that you have to understand yourself. You have to.
It's not something that's going to fit on a Facebook meme. All right, it's not something that's going to be fitting on a placard. It's not something that can be chanted at a protest. You know, this is stuff that you actually have to really look into quite deeply. And quite frankly, most people are too busy surviving to do anything like thinking.
I cannot even forgive them, you know, under this excuse that people are too busy. That is an excuse that just does not fly. The reality is that most people are unwilling and incapable of comprehending what is happening. And most people are incapable, not intellectually, but are incapable emotionally of comprehending this. They simply do not want to admit it to themselves that we live in a world in which their destruction is the ultimate goal. That is too painful a reality to comprehend, to accept, and people simply close their eyes. It is as though, you know, when some people are faced with the death of a loved one, and, you know, they refuse to admit that they have died. And
it's the grief process, you know, the anger, the denial, the depression, the bargaining, and then finally the acceptance. And the acceptance part just takes, well, in fact, I heard an interesting part of the analysis of the grief process. Did you know that the majority of people who've experienced trauma won't actually get over their grief? They won't actually achieve acceptance?
Yes, that is what we have now probably on a global level. But this process, you know, is hampered by the fact that this information is not widely distributed. People would have to seek it out and find it on their own, and they would have to find it through these alternative channels, and then they would have to trust their own ability to process this data, and they would not have to rely on others, on experts, you know, to validate this data. And that's another huge problem. Most people are just they don't trust their own intellectual abilities. They don't trust their own brains. They want experts to validate this reality. And of course, all the experts work for the authorities, and they're just, you know, in the business of misinforming the public so that the global genocide can be pursued to its ultimate end.
Have you ever been asked a question before, and you're like, it's not like I can't answer your question, but in order for you to even understand my answer, I'd have to tell you things that might take you years and cost you thousands of dollars to learn at a university?
Yeah, I tell people that, you know, if they want to know, they have to give me 2 hours. They have to listen to me for 2 hours. I'll be speaking basically nonstop for 2 hours, and they'll have to concentrate exclusively on this. And you know what I find out? With the exception of the old generation, the young are incapable of listening for more than 5 minutes. After a few phrases, I lose them. They lack the ability to concentrate on the subject, and that's part and parcel of the damage that has been done to their brain synapses, to their brains.
Well, and also they've been raised by, and also their primary givers are a television and an iPad, which don't exactly invoke the largest amount of concentration spans.
Yes, but listen what happens to when I talk to somebody who's in their 70s or 80s. despite their age, you think that the reverse would be the case, that the young, whose brains are, you know, fresh, they would be able to concentrate and get it faster rather than the old. But it's the reverse. The old, because they have not been tampered with, they have not been damaged to the same extent as this generation, one thing, and secondly, because they're not conditioned to concentrate only on headlines and to get their information from on the quick from an iPad or from a computer, they can listen. They can listen. Not only can they listen for hours, they can listen for days, and they get it so much faster. And they ask more intelligent questions, once they do get it. There have been very few exceptions with the young generation, and I'm glad that these exceptions still exist, because these exceptions now are the future. They will have to pick up where we leave this process off. I'm hoping that by going to Rome now and putting the church in a bind, in a moral bind, that I will force them to admit, it's collusion in genocide, and now to go to the secular authorities and force them to stop these biological methods of population control as well. I accomplished, a shutdown of the chemical methods in 2014 with my hunger strike at the Vatican then, and that process of eliminating these endocrine disruptors, these chemical toxins from our food and environment, is ongoing, and it'll take a couple more years, maybe 3 more years, to be completed. But it is ongoing, and it is going at a fast pace. Corporations and some institutions that are still controlled by the depopulationists are blocking and hampering this process. But by and large, the main politicians and doctors and lawyers now are working towards the elimination of these, because people have started to realize, even people in the system who thought that they have, a seat at the table, they're starting to realize that they have been that they cannot escape, they cannot protect themselves and their families from these depopulation methods either, because there are multiple, and those, nobody in the system other than those at the very, very top know about this multiple attack. Everybody in the system is privy, to one aspect of the population control program. And they thought, until I put it all together, people like you have been disseminating this information to the general public. By the way, I want to commend you, for the extraordinary role you play. I said it in the past that, you're worth your weight in gold, no correction, in diamonds, and this is the truth. The general media out there, not only are they useless, they are. Everything they do is to a detriment to society. So these people, I'm telling you, this situation in their what they're doing is not going to be forgiven or forgotten. There was a chance in 2014 to be forgiven and forgotten, and they have not taken that chance. And now there's no going back. The heads are going to roll. Many, many people are going to be severely punished for their contribution to the global genocide. There is no going back from that.
Now, it also belies the fact, although this show might be solid gold, let us understand that the gold market is 90% paper, and the diamond market is manipulated by bankers as well. So, isn't it funny, when you try to put a value on something, the greatest values that we have are examples from manipulated marketplaces that are controlled by the same people that we fight against? That's how all-encompassing this problem is. That's why it takes so many people to so long to even get that anything's going on. I had a look at the demographics of the listeners to my YouTube channel, at least, and on the whole, they're around about the 40 mark. Maybe burgeoning in the middle there. People who've spent decades living in the system, only then to realize that it's completely screwed, and that a lot of them have only just woken up recently. I was very lucky to wake up a lot earlier, primarily to some traumatic experiences, and I just want to pass on that trauma, Everybody needs to suffer a little bit. Everybody needs to hear a really bad sob story. Everybody needs to hear about something that terrifies them so badly that they can't sleep tonight. All right? So thank you, Kevin, for being one of the people who provide such things.
Well, this knowledge is a blow of major proportions. There's no doubt about it. And to recover from this knowledge, it does take, you know, 6 months to a year, depending on the person and their mental makeup. Before I forget, I would like to mention that to the listeners that I have published a new paper that basically outlines this new methods of population control. And this paper is now in the hands of the medical community. By the way, the medical community has started publishing my work. Not only are they publishing, so these are, you know, reputable medical journals. Not only are they publishing, but they're soliciting so many articles from me that I cannot possibly keep up, especially since I live in abject poverty and, you know, live in people's basements and sleep on people's couches for the past 5 years now. So I don't have the conditions to be able to have that kind of output. Besides, you know, writing is and uncovering these methods is not the only thing I do. My main focus now is on forcing the authorities to change course before they all end up in front of a firing squad. But this new paper is called Turning Nature Against Man, and it is subtitled The Role of Pandemics, Vaccines, and Genetics in the UN's Plan to Halt Population Growth. And in it, I describe, you know, this change of methodology from chemical to biological, and the role of vaccines and the role of the of genetics in these new methods of death, if you want. It's a very extraordinary important paper, and actually, it is it exposes, you know, the very methods on which the United Nations and the developing world now relies to accomplish the exact same goals that we here in the West have done through chemical methods. They would for them to accomplish their goal, the demographic goals and economic goals, they would need about 10 years of vaccinations, you know, on unknowing and unsuspecting civilians. And I'm trying to shut them down now, and this is part of the role, because if they continue, you know, the people in the developing world will be as damaged as the people of the developed world, and perhaps even more so, because the process there is faster. It's faster than here, and it's not not so subtle anymore. And also because they don't have, you know, the medical systems to cover up, you know, the damage and to mitigate for the damage caused by the depopulation lobby. And if I shut them down, I will force them to legislate. And which is the only decent thing to do, and it's the only solution. They have to legislate a replacement level fertility law. That is to say, everybody henceforth will be limited to 2 children only. For obvious reasons, then the population stabilizes. It neither grows nor decreases. And for the obvious reason that the responsibility for controlling and for limiting one's fertility would fall squarely on our shoulders, which means that then we can choose the method of contraception of our own liking, and the one that we deem to be most safe and with the least negative consequences or side effects. That is the only way forward. And now, of course, the international community is delaying this obvious process, this obvious step forward, by hoping that they can do this damage now, you know, for a few years through vaccines to bring the fertility of the developed world to below replacement level.
Well, it would be an ironic punishment if they wound up getting caught for all these crimes against humanity and then they wound up having to facilitate their own genocide by working in a bullet factory in order to manufacture the bullets that are going to be used to shoot them in a firing squad later on, you know? I love them little twists of fates. You can't make this shit up, folks. We'll be right back after the break. Just remember, this is a listener-supported broadcast and has been for some years, so please go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and donate today. Welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Ladies and gentlemen, I understand that sometimes my jokes are really bad. Like, really bad. Even I sometimes listen back to the broadcast and go, oh my God, that's just going to result in a tumour later on in life. Fuck. Right? That's how bad some of the jokes are. But I can assure you, none of the jokes that I'm telling on this show are worse than the truths that we're exposing. All right? Always remember that. Never forget it. And go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and set up a regular automatic payment, just so that you've got a regular supply of giggles and laughs and silliness in amongst the information that you're a slave who's about to be subsequently exterminated by ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery. You know, just sandwich it real nicely together in one sweet little package. That's the Vinnie Eastwood Show for you, ladies and gentlemen. My very special guest for this hour is Kevin Galilee. Still, he was here for the first hour as well. You see, this is one of those moments what I was talking about earlier, and here I am elaborating on it, making it even worse as the time goes on that I devote to it. It's Kevin Galilee, and he's broadcasting from the summer home of Vlad the Impaler in Romania. Welcome back.
For the remainder of the program, Vinny, we have 1 hour left. I want to discuss the latest Zika fear and so-called pandemic, because this engineered pandemic dovetails everything in the world today. It shows how intricate their methodologies are and how, under the cover of public health, they try to accomplish goals that go far beyond our health, or even demographics, or even economics. And this is rather complicated, so I'm going to explain. So I'm going to go from one thought to another, and if you afford me the time, I would appreciate it.
Here I am. Mute me, Mike. Go for your life, son.
Okay. On February 1st, 2016, the World Health Organization declared its fourth and latest public health emergency of international concern. This is a term they used for declaring a pandemic, a global pandemic. And this is only the fourth pandemic that they've declared in the history of the World Health Organization, which goes back to 1949, I believe. And all these pandemics were declared in the last 7 years, which indicates that it is rather they're rather the consequence of a change of policy and not of a proliferation of infectious diseases in the world in the last 7 years. And all of these public health emergencies of international concern have been declared by the current General Secretary of the World Health Organization, which is Dr. Margaret Chan, a Chinese citizen. Now, this latest public health emergency of international concern declared around the Zika virus, I contend it was not planned, that it is actually a primarily a desperate attempt to prevent the world from discovering the true culprit for the increase in microcephaly in Brazil. And microcephaly is the shrinking of the brain that we see in babies born in Brazil now in alarming numbers. And what they're trying to hide is the use of a larvicide called pyriproxifen, which is a chemical of extraordinary importance to the UN system because it is a vital component of covert sterilization to the World Health Organization's Global Technical Strategy for Malaria 2016 to 2030. And this Global Technical Strategy for Malaria is the blueprint for bringing the entire developing world that now lags behind in terms of demographics down to replacement level fertility or below. They want to do that in these 15 years from 2016 to 2030. So it's an extremely ambitious plan. This Global Technical Strategy for Malaria is a master plan, not only for malaria eradication, but also, and more importantly, for bringing and keeping the entire developing world down to replacement level fertility. So not only bringing it down to this fertility, but also keeping it there. It is indispensable to the depopulation lobby because it provides them with a plausible cover for sterilizing hard-to-reach people in remote places and in the flower of their reproductive lives around the world and on a continuous basis. Places and people that have so far escaped the tentacles of the UN system. This Zika virus and the it is Aegypti mosquito, serve as scapegoats for microcephaly and allow governments in the region and the UN to capitalize on the fear and confusion generated by the by this unintended crisis to accomplish much-needed environmental, demographic, and legislative objectives. First of all, Zika cannot possibly be the cause of microcephaly, and this is clarified by the total absence of microcephaly in neighboring Colombia, which has registered thousands of Zika infections, but no cases of microcephaly whatsoever. And the same is the case elsewhere. Furthermore, the likely cause of microcephaly, which is this chemical, this larvicide, pyroproxifen, has already been identified by Abrasرا, an organization of Brazilian doctors who have demanded urgent epidemiological studies, but whose demands have so far fallen off on deaf ears. So the question is not whether Zika causes microcephaly, but rather why the Brazilian Ministry of Health, acting on the recommendations of WHO, has been applying pyroproxifen to the drinking water reservoirs of the people of northeast Brazil, which is the region where the incidence of microcephaly has shot up. Well, the official answer is that the Brazilian Ministry of Health puts pyroproxifen into the drinking water reservoirs of its citizens since the middle of 2014 on the recommendation of PAHO and the WHO. PAHO is a regional subdivision of the WHO, to inhibit the growth of mosquito larvae and thus provide vector control for the spread of dengue and malaria. The Ministry of Health and the WHO, however, know that pyroproxifen is teratogenic and causes malformations in young mosquitoes that prevent the development of adult insect characteristics and of reproductive organs in order to stop the proliferation of the mosquito. But neither the Ministry of Health nor the UN is about to recognize that the damage done to mosquito development from larvae to pupa to adult by pyroproxifen is also done to humans in the development from zygote to embryo to fetus. And they're not about to admit this because pyroproxifen, a known sterilizant, is crucial to the population control agenda, and 300,000 pyroproxifen-coated bed nets hang in every hut and over every bed of the UN Millennium Villages Project, which is a pet project of the United Nations of major importance, because this is how this is where they test, you know, all of their methods on Africans to see how they can sterilize them. And they're not about to admit it because this chemical and the bed nets coated with it are manufactured by Sumimoto Chemicals, which is a strategic partner of Monsanto. And Monsanto, we all know, is the death company par excellence and the corporate pivot of the depopulation lobby. And because it is known that the longevity and survival rates of organisms treated with pyroproxifen are shorter and have significantly lower or fewer progeny. Just as it is known that male flies sterilized with pyroproxifen can transfer their sterility to females by sexual intercourse, according to Sumimoto Laboratory's own research. And if that can be done in mosquitoes, the same effect can be inferred for humans. And they will not admit it because a billion, I said a billion, not 1 million, 1 billion bed nets manufactured by Vestergaard and subsidized with UN funds are coated with a similar poison called deltamethrin, which is also a known neurotoxin an endocrine disruptor, listed as such by the EPA, and it is also a well-known suppressor of spermatogenesis. But that nevertheless covers the bed nets of just as many families throughout the developing world. That's 1 billion families. And they will not admit it because the WHO mandates the use of this sterilizing, mutagenic, and carcinogenic long-lasting insecticidal nets in its 2012 Global Plan for Insecticide-Resistant Management in Malaria Vectors. This is basically their manual on how these chemical methods can be used to purportedly fight malaria, but at the same time fight fertility. it is a lot more convenient to blame Zika than to assume responsibility for causing congenital malformations to an entire generation of children in the process of sterilizing them and their parents on the sly, especially when this poor excuse can be milked for all it's worth to accomplish other hidden goals. And I want to tell you now what these hidden goals are so that you understand the complexity of their thought processes and of their plans. One of the main reasons why they do this is to protect the Amazon. Brazil and Colombia are purportedly the most affected nations by the Zika virus for a reason. Why? They surround the Amazon basin, which needs to be protected from human intrusion because it represents the right lung of the planet, and it is the most prolific incubator of life. Now, whether the rate of infection is as large as it has been reported, and I doubt that that is the case, and whether it is spreading as rapidly as medical authorities maintain, and I doubt that this is the case, it is irrelevant, because the fear generated by a real or invented pandemic is the same so long as the mainstream media does its part to whip up mass hysteria. And that is exactly what the media does, without any scientific justification whatsoever. The existing cattle ranchers and farmers who are responsible for deforesting the Amazon at a rate of 15,000 square kilometers a year since 1977, an abuse so large as to represent 18% of the world's total annual deforestation, these people will be driven by fear of infection and the sterilizing chemicals used to presumably combat the carriers of disease. They will be hopefully driven out of the region. Now, if women are kept away or sent out of the Amazon for fear of infection, then the regional population will not grow and the Amazon will be protected. Furthermore, potentially new human intruders will think twice before venturing into the world's most mosquito-infested region to slash and burn so as to live off cattle rearing and subsistence farming. So the fear of infection and microcephaly, amplified by rumors that may just prove right about the release of genetically modified Oxitec mosquitoes capable of spreading an embryo death gene that leads to human sterility, will unburden governments in the region from the politically difficult and financially prohibitive task of safeguarding the territorial integrity and rich biodiversity of the Amazon, the world's most crucial natural habitat. All conservation efforts to date have failed. This, it is hoped, will succeed and will allow Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff to keep a promise that she made in 2015 at the UN, namely to eliminate illegal deforestation and restore 120,000 square kilometers of lost Amazonian rainforest by 2030. Now, considering that more than half of the world's rainforests have already been deforested in the past half century, that Brazil has the world's second highest rates of deforestation in the world after Indonesia, that the country's leadership has made a firm commitment to stop and reverse the trend, that Sustainable Development Goal 15, adopted by 193 countries, pledges to protect terrestrial ecosystems by halting deforestation and restoring degraded forests, that deforestation accounts for nearly 15% of global greenhouse gas emissions, and that Norwegian Prime Minister from 2005 to 2013, Jens Stoltenberg, who is a stalwart of the depopulation lobby and the current Secretary General of NATO, pledged in 2008 to donate $1 billion to the newly established Amazon Fund on the condition that this money would go to projects aimed at slowing down the deforestation of the Amazon rainforest. Well, one can safely conclude that this crisis has been engineered at the highest global governance level to accomplish the geopolitically important goals. And none other is more important than the preservation of the planet's vital ecosystems. To strengthen the case for protecting the Amazon, a perceived rise in infectious diseases and Zika are being blamed on deforestation and other environmental factors. So that protecting the Amazon basin is one of the main reasons of this manufactured Zika pandemic. The second one is to change abortion laws and sexual behavior in the region throughout Latin America and to mandate sexual education. Why? Well, no sooner was the Zika outbreak announced that calls for legislative changes to abortion laws throughout Latin America began appearing in newspapers around the region and throughout the world, and are being echoed with increasing frequencies by NGOs and politicians, despite the fact that Brazil's and Colombia's total fertility rates have been below replacement level for the past decade. This begs the question, why? Well, with chemical methods of population control via endocrine disruptors inserted in water, food, and beverages being phased out now throughout the world, and in the absence of legal restrictions on fertility, governments need permissive abortion laws and high contraceptive prevalence rates if they are to eventually abandon covert methods of population control for overt legislation that will allow them to keep the total fertility rate at or below replacement level legally and honorably until such time as optimal population levels are reached. And of course, we know that Latin America is primarily Roman Catholic, and in the region, a strong pro-life stance persists. And that has prevented changes to the legal code, and most countries in the region have restrictive abortion laws that either prohibit abortion in any and all circumstances, like El Salvador, Nicaragua, and the Dominican Republic, or allow it only in medical emergencies to save the mother's life, like in Venezuela, Brazil, and Guatemala. In this restrictive legal environment, contraceptives are not always available or affordable, and the contraceptive prevalence rates are insufficient to reach and maintain replacement-level fertility. So the numbers that governments today show in the contraceptive prevalence rate, they show around 60 or 70% user are high because they include modern and traditional methods of birth control, and traditional methods we all know are not very reliable. In order to force much needed legislation through, the authorities are building momentum in favor of legalizing abortion by frightening people with Zika, mosquitoes, and microcephaly on the one hand, and by angering them with futile health directives that advise women to delay pregnancy on the one hand, knowing very well that couples cannot delay or prevent pregnancy since contraceptives are neither readily available nor affordable to most people in this Catholic and poor region. Even before the WHO declared Zika an international health emergency, national governments began warning their people to delay pregnancy. To date, Brazil, Ecuador, Colombia, Jamaica, and El Salvador have all asked their citizens to delay pregnancy, the latter for 2 years, that is, El Salvador. So they're telling people, don't get pregnant for 2 years. Leaving all pretenses aside, Colombia's health minister stated, and I quote, that a confirmation of Zika infection and possible microcephaly may allow women to qualify for abortions, which might otherwise be illegal. End of the quote. So you get where they're going. To soften public opinion to the idea of abortion, the media flashes images of babies with severe microcephaly at every opportunity, and it could very well be that the apparent increase in congenital malformations is greatly exaggerated to create a state of tension and panic, because the prospect of having to raise a child with microcephaly is unappealing to most people, and this makes abortion that much more palatable. If enough parents demand abortion, the political establishment will duly abide, and even religious objections will be overlooked. And that's important. Religious objections. And indeed, the medical authorities have started to backtrack on the true number of Zika infections that until recently have been grossly overreported. For instance, at the end of January, the Brazilian Ministry of Health reported 3,760 suspected cases of microcephaly under investigation, of which 709 have been rejected for being inaccurately diagnosed and only 404 were confirmed, 98% of which are concentrated in the northeast of Brazil. To weaken religious objections, which stand in the way of changing abortion laws and contraceptive laws across the region, The UN system has also fashioned 3 cases of Zika transmission through sexual contact, which is a complete fiction. And the CDC, not to be outdone, has declared that it is investigating 14 such cases, also complete fiction. Because in all probability, none of these cases is valid, but the threat of sexual transmission is needed to create a moral dilemma for conservative Catholics and force the Church to change or at the very least soften its teachings on birth control. And already the media, the mainstream media, the prostitute mainstream media, as you like to call it, they have started bombarding Pope Francis with such questions about changing the doctrine of on birth control, which is indeed needed. Beyond Latin America and the realm of Catholicism, calls for sexual education in schools have become louder and more aggressive. And why is that important? Because it paves the way towards a change from government-imposed and covert methods of population control to population-driven and overt methods of population control. And listen to how sophisticated they are. Because in a coordinated fashion, the mainstream media in the Arab world features stories of insufficient sexual education in the United States and the Western world, not only to improve sexual education in the Western world, but also to implant the idea at home in the Muslim world without offending Muslims in the Middle East, where the struggle against fertility, against high fertility, lags behind UN targets. So fear, and not just sexual education, is promoted to alter mating habits and encourage the use of contraceptives. And despite any evidence, health authorities throughout the world maintain that the virus can be spread through sexual intercourse for 3 months after infection, which is a lie of major proportions. This misconception is disseminated for one and one reason only, namely to get people to use protection during sexual activity in order to prevent unwanted pregnancies and thus halt population growth. Let's move on to the third objective, which is to suppress fertility rates and eliminate regional disparities. While the health authorities use the fear of Zika to combat population growth, but that is fairly obvious, despite great efforts to conceal this. Equally obvious is that Brazil singled out the northeast of the country to launch a chemical attack on human fertility. When you look at the national total fertility rates of Brazil, you see that the total fertility rate is safely below replacement level. It's around 1.7 children per woman. But these national statistics fail to reveal regional differences, which are significant. The northeast, which is the region where all these microcephaly cases have appeared and where this chemical is used, has the poorest and the brownest people in the country. 63% of the population is of mixed origin, mixed race, whereas the south is mostly white. And this region has significantly higher fertility rates than the rest of the country, approximately 2.4 children per woman compared to only 1.6 in the south, where the population is 75% white. It is also the primary source of migrants for the Amazon region, and the Brazilian government has pledged to stop and reverse the deforestation of the Amazon basin. And this region just keeps feeding people into the Amazon basin because they have nowhere to go, right? So they go and try and make a living there. The fear of Zika and the use of sterilizing chemicals in water, such as the larvicide paraproxifen, and air, because they're using a fumigant called melathion, which is also sterilizing, to presumably act as vector control for the Zika-carrying mosquito, allow the Brazilian government to level the fertility scale between the south and the north. In other words, they want to bring fertility rates in the north down to the same level as in the south, to 1.6, 1.7 children per woman. They're just multiplying too fast, all these brown people up in the north of Brazil. So the government has taken action, and it needs this Zika excuse. And there's one more objective to this Zika scare, which goes beyond Brazil and the region. that is to secure funding for covert methods of population control, which has become increasingly difficult because we sniff them out, we talk about this, and national legislatures are unwilling to fund these programs anymore. So knowledge of covert depopulation methods is increasing rapidly due to the inability of state actors to censor the internet and to control the means of mass communication. Although the mainstream media is fully controlled and the alternative media is largely controlled, the social media allows people across the world to share and exchange information that is otherwise restricted and privileged. And anybody who's, you know, active on the social media nowadays will know that, you know, the main topic is depopulation, covert methods of depopulation. This topic just underlies everything else. And this has diminished the ability of governments to obtain funding for covert depopulation programs from parliaments and legislatures, and has forced administrations and the UN system to rely on billionaires and corporations who have duly filled in the void. It also impairs the ability of the UN system to close the gap in per capita spending for health services, to reduce maternal and child mortality, as well as child undernutrition between the developed and the developing world, which is a strategic priority for the sustainability agenda, and indeed a worthy one. Europe, for instance, spends $1,400 per person for healthcare annually, while Africa barely manages $140. The transfer of funding responsibilities from state to private actors, which is why where the, all these billionaires come in now, and you see more and more of them are pledging their wealth to the international community, has the advantage of protecting the newest strategies of depopulation by limiting their knowledge to a smaller number of individuals who are outside public office and scrutiny, and therefore not handicapped by oversight and transparency rules. And this is where people like Bill Gates come into the play. Last, the political establishment is distancing itself, I believe, from the core of the depopulation lobby, perhaps in advance of disclosure, so as to limit ultimate responsibility for genocide to a very small number of individuals, and thus restore the credibility of the state, which is now shattered. When you look at the largest single donor to the WHO, surpassing all other governments, who do you find? You find the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which is also the largest funding source for the Gavi Alliance. The Gavi Alliance is this global group that vaccinates people around the world. So Bill Gates is behind this, and his money. While Bill Gates can donate billions at a time and boast the largest single charitable donations in history, President Obama and other heads of state, they have to take advantage of opportunities created by manufactured pandemics to beg for more modest sums under the pretext of emergency funds. So that's the only way they can squeeze money now, as emergency funds. To fill the gap in the population control funds left by retreating governments, the depopulation lobby, led by Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, started in 2010 under the Giving Pledge campaign to pool the wealth of other billionaires who agreed to donate a good proportion of their fortunes to charity. As of April 2012, 81 billionaires have committed to giving at least half of their fortunes to charity, and more have joined them since. Unfortunately, the charity envisioned by these individuals has more in common with genocide and less with concern for the welfare of individuals, which is why their billions are used to lower the population and fertility bars two rungs lower by the end of the 21st century, just as planned by the UN and national technocrats and revealed by the latest projections. And when you look at the latest projections, obviously by radio, I cannot show the graph, you will see that by 2045, the vast majority of countries will be below replacement level. And by 2095, that is towards the end of this century, all countries, with the exception of Zambia, are scheduled to be below replacement level fertility. Well, these are the dovetailing objectives that lie behind the manufactured Zika pandemic. This is how complex they are. This is how ambitious their plans are. And they're moving, you know, in every direction to accomplish the Millennium Development Goals.
All right. Is that the whole ball of wax there?
Yes. And, you know, this kind of information and a lot more, because I discuss all of these public health emergencies declared by the WHO since Dr. Chan has taken over leadership. I discuss that in my newest article, which is going to completely shatter, if it is widely broadcast, it will completely shatter all their plans for sterilizing people across the developing world, which is why, you know, my article is now, as all my publications previously, it is suppressed and delayed. Even, by the way, this article was commissioned, if you want, was asked of me to write by a reputable medical journal. I did so. I submitted it. And now, of course, they're waiting for political permission to publish, and I doubt they will receive it. Why? Because unlike chemical methods of sterilization, this is now the bread and butter of the international community. And without these sterilizing vaccines and these sterilizing chemicals, they cannot accomplish their demographic goals throughout the developing world, these 40 or 50 countries that are sort of still lagging behind in terms of the demographic transition. We shall see if they have the courage to publish it. But if they do, that'll be an end of the United Nations Millennium Villages Project, all of these 1 billion bed nets that are now poisoning people across the world. The sterility will have to be pulled down and replaced with, you know, bed nets that are not coated with these sterilizing chemicals. And then you can imagine the cost of that, right? Who's going to fund that? And how are they going to accomplish their sterilizing goals across the world without these methods?
The answer is they wouldn't.
They wouldn't. One other thing that I want to mention, which applies to people in China, in case we have any Chinese listeners, or you know, I'm sure there will be a lot of Chinese people living in the West who have relatives back at home. And that is, I have discovered just a few days ago, the method by which the Chinese government sterilizes its people. We know that they have a one-child policy now, recently altered to be a two-children policy. But beyond this legal method of controlling population, it turns out that the Chinese government is playing dirty as well, and they are using a substance called Gossypol, which inhibits fertility, and which has been tested already as a male oral contraceptive in China and in Brazil. Was actually discovered in Brazil by a Brazilian doctor, but that was in late 1960s or early 1970s. But the side effects were so terrible that it was taken out of use throughout the world. Well, it turns out that the Chinese government has adopted Gossypol as a covert method of sterilization. And of course, this chemical causes terrible damage to human health. And I suspect the Chinese government wants that because, you know, they don't want to end up with a lot of octogenarians, a lot of old people to take care of in old age. So they are feeding people Gossypol. My guess is that it's primarily used in drugs. But and I say that because this Gossypol is also known to possess anti-malarial properties. So I'm certain that they put it in a malaria medicine. And we know due to my article that the program of combating malaria is a program of combating fertility in disguise. You know, the Chinese government being a one-party state and having no civil society and no functional courts, they can take liberties that the West cannot. Obviously, Gossypol is going to wreak havoc with the health of the Chinese people, and we're going to see that their lifespan is not going to increase, but rather decrease. So those people in China, stay away from Gossypol, stay away from medicines, and try and find out where else the Chinese government puts Gossypol in. I'm sure they put it in some, you know, vital foods or beverages.
Now, I wanted to also get another thing out of you and maybe even mute my microphone and sit back for another 20 minutes because it's like I wanted to get you to explain to a person, like, in their average daily life, how many depopulation agendas, like, there's so many simultaneous depopulation agendas from birth till death and every moment in your daily life that you're currently suffering under. I kind of wanted to get you to walk through somebody's daily life and which of these that they'd be actually, in fact, be exposed to in a typical day.
Well, first of all, there are two categories. There are those that seek to undermine our fertility or subvert our fertility, and those are chemical and biological. And then there are those who seek to undermine the family structure, and those are psychosocial and economic. Both are dangerous, and both control, you know, virtually every, once you put them all together, control virtually every aspect of our lives and have, you know, terrible consequences. But in terms of chemical, you know, we have these endocrine disruptors, the oldest of which is fluoride. Fluoride has been in use, you know, in water, milk, dental products, even in ice cream. It has been used, you know, for 70 years now. It's the first and oldest method of population control, fluoride. But in addition to fluoride, there are the European Chemical Agency has identified another 165 endocrine disruptors. That's 165. And these have already identified as damaging to reproduction. 165 chemicals. And there's another list now of 300 additional suspected endocrine disruptors. Do you understand that? 300 plus 165, that's 465 chemicals in our food system, beverages, and environment now that are there for one and one reason only, to sterilize us. What are the main ones? Well, plastics, or plasticizers rather, which is the stuff, the chemicals used to make plastic. So anything plastic is a sterilizant. And you go to any grocery store now, you try and find anything that's not in plastic. This is why all the beverages are now packaged in plastic bottles. Of course, now that the process has reversed, you know, you start seeing glass bottles. So people who are in the know will be buying glass bottles. Here in Romania, for instance, 3 months ago, 4 months ago, when I left the continent and went to Florida, there was absolutely no plastic, glass containers for any kind of beverage. Not mineral water, not pop, nothing. Now, 3 or 4 mineral waters are packaged in glass bottles. So the transition has begun. Obviously, you can imagine, they have to retool all of their industrial plants, all of these bottling plants, from plastic bottling to glass bottling. Imagine how much money that and how much time this is going to take. And of course, they have to phase out all of these plastics. And they're doing that because the sustainability agenda demands that nature is protected. And of course, all these plastics used to sterilize us, needed to sterilize us, and that have been sterilizing us since the 1980s, are now being phased out because they also damage the environment. And they, you know, they're killing us, they're killing the environment, they're killing all of the other species as well. So you have upwards of 400 endocrine disruptors in the system that are sterilizing us or damaging our immunity. Then you have all these insecticides and pesticides and herbicides, and glyphosate is, you know, the perfect example. This is what is used now for all the GMOs, for all the genetically modified crops. And they are hanging on to this glyphosate now for dear life, because if they eliminate glyphosate, they got nothing left chemically to sterilize us. So you see now, for instance, in the European Union, there's legislation ongoing to try and keep glyphosate in the system for 15 more years, despite, you know, knowing that it is carcinogenic and whatnot. But they're trying desperately to hang on to this and to delay, you know, doing the inevitable, which is legislating replacement-level fertility. So you have all these insecticides and pesticides and herbicides. And then you have biological methods. And the biological, the main one, of course, being vaccines. And why are vaccines needed? Well, they are needed to undermine the immune system. They undermine the immune system because they don't want us to live as long. And they want us to be more sickly so that they have the opportunity to be in contact with us so that they can get us, you know, through direct contact through the healthcare system. And this is particularly valuable for the developing world where there is no infrastructure that they could use to get people en masse, you know, through, for instance, the water supply by fluoridating the water. They can't do that in the developing world, you know. People don't drink out of plastic bottles because, you know, most people are too poor to buy beverages. They just drink out of the river or out of a gutter. And this is where vaccines come in. But the latest generation of vaccines is a whole different beast than what we had before, because these vaccines have the ability of causing apoptosis, which is reprogramming the death cells. The cells have the ability to take themselves out of commission when they're too old or when they're sick. This is a mechanism that the body has for renewal and for protection against cancer and other such diseases. And they're fiddling with this mechanism in order to cause morbidity and premature death. And that is what the latest generation of vaccines can accomplish. This is why it is imperative now to stay away from any and all vaccines, because you just don't know which ones are adulterated and which ones are not. So this is for biological methods. Let me just now go to the psychosocial methods, because you know, these are a lot more subtle. I've mentioned in my book "Killing Us Softly" that they use, you know, laws that criminalize formerly acceptable behaviors, so that they can put more and more people in prison, and they can do so selectively. Why do they need that? Well, because they need to target, and this is probably part and parcel of the eugenic agenda as well. They need to target, you know, minorities. They need to target the poor. They need to target the old, but primarily minorities. This is why we see this discrepancy in Western jails between blacks and Muslims, as opposed to whites sitting in jails. In the population, all of the Western world is overwhelmingly identifiable minorities, and that is not because these people commit more crimes. It's because they are being targeted for imprisonment. You put them in prison, you know, for any given period of time, they can't procreate. Their families are not going to thrive. Their families are going to die out. You have these, you know, these terrible laws where you punish people for life imprisonment, for instance, in the United States, for, you know, stealing a steak if that's their third offense. And this is makes absolutely no legal sense whatsoever, no moral sense whatsoever. But it's needed for this reason, for the eugenic aspect of the global depopulation policy. Another way in which, you know, among these psychosocial or legal methods of undermining family structure is the social services, and especially the child services. Under the guise of child protection, they are breaking families apart. And we see this method, you know, especially brutally applied in Scandinavian countries, and now there are some very, very high-profile cases in Norway and in Canada. Canada is one of the worst, probably the number one culprit in this respect. You go to any jail in Canada, and half the population, I've been in prison 7 times now because of my political activities, half the population in jail sits there because of so-called domestic affairs. 50 years ago, there wasn't a single person in jail on domestic issues. Now, you know, you have a fight at home with your wife, you end up in jail. And that is deliberate. That is how they destroy families. Because once you are in the system as on a domestic offense, you never get out of the system. They let you out periodically on conditions that are impossible to abide, and they pull you back in anytime they want to. And they specifically target large families. And we see that in Norway, for instance, in this very high-profile case where a family with five children has all of their children now have been taken away for, you know, no reason whatsoever, other than the imagined reason that the father, you know, spanked his daughter's little, spanked his daughters to keep them in line. Although no such evidence of abuse, of physical abuse, exists. And this has the entire continent in an uproar, because now people are finally beginning to see, you know, just how repressive these methods are. And these methods are needed by governments, because they can be selective. You cannot be selective with chemical poisons coming through your water. When you fluoridate the water, you fluoridate the entire population, right? You cannot be selective. But with these psychosocial and legal methods, they're using these institutions of state under the pretext of protecting children in order to actually destroy families and make sure that no family thrives beyond two children. And to destroy, you know, the families of minorities, in which we see that minorities are targeted. It's a very, very dirty way of doing business. And it is a racist way. This, you know, this better than anything shows the racist element and the eugenic element of the genocide agenda, the population control agenda. By and large, these are the main methods. Of course, economics, we all know what's happening. Suppression of wages, creating artificial scarcity for nations and people alike, destruction of social services, the creation of debt, so that, you know, once you are caught in a cycle of debt, you never get out of it, and then, you know, you have to pay interest rather than be able to feed another child. And that keeps families small, because it imposes artificial economic restrictions on life. Well, these are the methods. So you can imagine that we are affected in every respect. These methods dictate our wages. They dictate how we can educate and discipline our children. They dictate what we eat and the safety of what we eat. The price of our food, where it comes from, how many poisons these foods contain. They determine our health, or rather our poor health, our deteriorating health. And all of these things are shown, you know, in statistics as you look across the past seven decades, where you see that the demographic transition is accompanied step by step by an epidemiologic transition. That is to say, as they have subverted fertility, chronic diseases have shot up, because they undermine the entire human body, the entire endocrine system. And this causes untold health problems. So despite, you know, an exploding costs for healthcare and exploding number of hospitalizations and hospitals and technologies for medical care and medicines and so on, our health has only gone from bad to worse. And this will continue to be the case, simply because medicine, all modern medicine does nowadays, is to mitigate for, you know, the damage caused by this program of population control, which is a slow mass poisoning into of the population into oblivion, into sterility first, and into oblivion second. As I said, you know, on my generation, I'm 50 years old, we are sterile to the tune of 25%, and about 60% of us suffer from chronic illnesses. The next generation, my children's generation, they will be sterile to the tune of 50%. This is already the case, by the way, with those who are 20 years of age and under. They will be sterile to the tune of 50%. And they already, you look at this generation in their 20s and early 30s, they have a poorer health and physical state than my generation, our 50s and 60s. And, you know, this is not a natural process. Obviously, any idiot can see that. This is damage caused by these policies.
Okay.
Mass poisoning.
So let's sum up. You're born, you get a whole bunch of sterilizing vaccines injected into you. Like if you're in the United States, you get about 50 of them or so on and so forth within the first couple of years of your life. And And all the things that you're fed and all the things that you drink are usually contaminated by some kind of sterilant, and it's fed to you in a container that is in itself a contaminated sterilant. So when you become an adult, you wake up and you're surrounded by Wi-Fi, which cooks your cells, and the energy saver light bulbs that do that as well, that are also carcinogens, and you make all of your food, which is all poison and all got sterilants in it, in all poison, all sterilant containing containers at all times. And when you walk down the street, you get exposed to more sterilants as you're going and just walking down the street due to pollution, be that electronic or physical pollution. And on top of that, when you're watching the news or anything like that, they tell you the population's a really bad thing and it's growing too fast, and you should be really, really grateful that there's things like wars and viruses out there that are killing massive swaths of humanity off like mosquitoes under a net.
Yes. And of course, I forgot to mention chemtrails, and that's another ball. Their primary use, obviously, is to mitigate for global warming. But their secondary use, and equally important, is to fill our environment with nanoparticles of heavy metals. And these nanoparticles of heavy metals obviously accelerate disease and exacerbate our morbidity and mortality. That is needed now more than ever because of the Western world. And this is only done in the Western world, by the way, where the population, you know, structure is such that we have too many old people that have to be liquidated. That's why I'm going now to Rome to shut down these, you know, two methods left that are not being phased out, and that's vaccines and chemtrails. And the civil society is quite well organized in this respect. There are, you know, a lot of groups out there fighting vaccines and chemtrails, but of course most or many of these groups are led by people from within the system. Why? In order to keep activists from connecting the dots. Because once you connect the dots back to depopulation, obviously you can get the people, you know, to fight these methods for dear life, because people realize that this really is a matter of life and death. It's not just, you know, an aesthetic inconvenience that they're spraying our skies with chemicals, and then we don't see the sunshine, and we can't get a good suntan. In terms of vaccines, that, well, there are pluses and minuses there. You know, once you know what these vaccines are for and what they can do and what they are doing, you know, there are no pluses anymore. You only see minuses, and you won't take your child or your body anywhere near a needle, because you cannot trust the authorities. They cannot be trusted with anything anymore, let alone with your children's lives and health. These people are in the process of killing us, plain and simple.
Trusting the untrustworthy has not always been traditionally the best move. What's interesting, though, is that if you can instill doubt, it will shake people's most strongly held belief, right? That the government and that people with authority are there to look after you. They're there to help you. Whereas the lesson of history is the more power that gets accumulated in people at the top of a hierarchical structure, the less freedom there is for everybody, the less wealth there is to go around, and the less progress that society tends to make. In general, right? When things are shared, when we're living together, when we actually care about each other, that's when you create a society that's actually worth living in, as opposed to, as I mentioned before, the only value being held by the human race being money.
The entire governing structure, from the national to the international level, is illegitimate, because they are committing genocide in the process of, you know, governing. And once this knowledge becomes widespread, the trust, the little remaining trust that is left, will evaporate. And once the trust is gone, God help us, because everything is going to crumble. This is why I urge people in power now to take action and to change course now, and then to move out of the way and let a new generation take over, because they're all tainted. They're not to be trusted.
Okay, Kevin, unfortunately, we've run out of time. Thank you for listening, ladies and gentlemen. Donate at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.